C7. Number 5A.
Today we start out with a subject on oneness, considering the sense of oneness in every chapter of the textbook. Perhaps I should tell you a little bit of the history of this work. When I was contemplating the subject of oneness as it impelled itself on our thought round about the time when we were considering very much the chart, that is, the four levels of science, one began to see that what is presented in my book, The Structure of the Christian Science Textbook, Our Way of Life, as a matrix, is actually showing the level of absolute Christian science and Christian science. And when you remember what we have been doing, I think 1975 here at the class, when we were considering the matrix of Christian science as presented through the textbook, we saw that the matrix that we had at that time was showing as the index I, the absolute sense of Christian science, and the index J, the sense of Christian science. You remember that we said that the matrix can be symbolized through the arithmetical formula of A and then subscripted IJ, where A means the subject of the matrix, I means the index that we had usually on the top of the matrix, and J really the index that we had on the left-hand side of the matrix, and that compiling that matrix through the inductive way of reasoning from the text of the textbook to a matrix, we arrived at seeing that the textbook, when read consecutively, would give us such a matrix of Christian science, showing, as I said, the index I as the level of absolute Christian science and the index J on the level of Christian science. When we had this analysis and represented as a matrix, naturally thought was turned to the question, does actually Mrs. Eddy only show the level of absolute Christian science and Christian science in the textbook? What about the level of divine science? And if there is in the textbook also the level of divine science, how does it fit into our matrix which we had on the textbook? Therefore, I was interested in seeing in how far the textbook would speak about divine science, and also if divine science is at the point of oneness, as you know, at the point of oneness. Why do I say that? If you remember, when we go back to our teaching on the four levels of science, especially as presented there in those talks on the vertical, which I gave in New York, those talks which I still feel are one of the most important talks on the subject of the chart. I would say those talks in New York that are taped are, so to say, necessary in order to understand better the book on the What is the title of my book? The Four Levels of Spiritual Consciousness. Yeah. In order to understand that book, I think one should also know the subject of those four verticals, which I have given way back in 1971 and 2. Yes. So when we did those levels, you remember that we could see how on the level of science itself we have the infinite one, how that translates itself to the level of divine science as oneness, small o, oneness, how that translates itself to the level of absolute Christian science as the unity between principle and idea, and if it's translated further down to the level of Christian science, that it shows the atoning of man with God, so that man is one with God. There we had a very clear example of how an identity in being has multi-dimensional value, has multi-dimensional phenomena, that something that is called the infinite one, the moment is translated to another level, to another dimension, takes on another phenomena, like oneness in divine science, unity in absolute Christian science, atoning in on the level of Christian science. Now at that time, we were much more conscious of the fact that what we have been presenting in the structure of the Christian Science textbook were actually only accentuating the level of absolute Christian Science and Christian Science, but not so much the level of divine science of oneness. And therefore, the question arose, how far does the level of divine science as oneness enter into the whole structure of the Christian Science textbook? And another question, if that sense of oneness enters into the text of the textbook, is that sense of oneness always the same sense, no matter in which chapter I'm reading? Or is there a difference of oneness from one chapter to the other? Are there various aspects of oneness from one chapter to the other? So this was a hypothesis that had to be investigated and seen, is it actually so that Mrs. Eddy would change the aspect of oneness or not? How could one analyze such a question? Well, I couldn't see anything else but to start to read the textbook from beginning to end, line by line, sentence by sentence, chapter by chapter. And by reading the text, just listen, where does Mrs. Eddy lift the tone to the pedal note of divine science? What are the statements that would conform to the level of divine science? What are her subjects, her themes, that would conform to the level of divine science? And make note of that. This means, as you can easily think, that the text very often runs over a long period just on the level of Christian science and perhaps a little bit on absolute Christian science, and that the explanation of the level of divine science is only intertwined here and there, and that therefore the story is not a consecutive story in divine science. This is one important point to recognize in order that we can actually analyze the textbook in this way. When way back we were investigating the textbook as a consecutive story, therefore as a story that where one theme was linked up with the next theme, and therefore the text was one consecutive, uninterrupted story, and when we were analyzing that, we actually arrived at what we have in the structure of the textbook. That is therefore a consecutive story, whereas what we are contemplating this week as oneness is not, so to say, a consecutive story in the text. It's much more taking out of every chapter the underlying, always repeating sense of oneness, and only when one considers this tone of oneness that is intertwined into one chapter and compares it with that which is intertwined in the next chapter and then in the next chapter, that we only then get a story of oneness. I hope I could make that clear, how one approaches the textbook for this analysis. Therefore, it's a different approach than the approach for making a matrix on the textbook. Is that clear? Well, there's not much chance at the moment to say no. So the analytical method, you can see, with which we approach the textbook is here different. Again, you can see how important method is in the interpretation of the textbook. That the moment we have another subject which we contemplate in the textbook, we have first to be aware what kind of method we have to use in order to have an adequate method and not a wrong method, that we do not adopt a method that was right for one subject and adopt this subject for another subject. Each approach has its own method, and this is always the most important thing to be conscious of before one starts, that one chooses the right method for analysis. So here we have therefore a matrix that will not coincide with the matrix that we were contemplating 2 years ago, when we were contemplating the structure of the textbook. What we do here is not to contemplate so much the structure of the textbook, but much more the aspect of oneness within that structure. Actually, what we would get is a matrix that has the overall tone of oneness, and not the one of the structure book, which has an overall tone of order and unfoldment in the chapters. Here, the tone of oneness has not an order and unfoldment within the chapter. It has only an order and unfoldment from chapter to chapter, and therefore you can see it is of a higher, of a more general order. In contemplating this chapter this week, we will try to summarize the sense of oneness in each chapter and put it into the matrix layout that you have in front of you. You have in front of you a matrix. I left the text out. I just gave the skeleton of the matrix. I could easily have put in my findings, and then it would have been very much easier for the student. But recently, in the recent years, I have found out that it makes much more, makes much a greater impact if we work on such a matrix in the way that we ourselves put our findings into it, and each one with his own handwriting, and in this way show how a matrix comes into shape and takes on its gestalt, so that we also know how a matrix is being made, and not just to see the finished product. So what we are going to do is that we consider each chapter separately, that we then try to find out what is the sense of oneness in each chapter, epitomize that in as few words as possible, and then write it into the box of this matrix. And write it in above the dotted line, because beneath the dotted line we could then write in the specific dualistic sense of that chapter. So that we have in one box above the dotted line the positive sense of oneness, and beneath the dotted line the dualistic aspect of that chapter. Then we will take chapter by chapter and go through it, and when we have done the first four chapters, then we can ask ourselves now, what is the common denominator of the first four chapters, and then epitomize on the top, under the term word, epitomize there what is the first column, and in this way, as we follow through the 16th chapter, can fill in the indices, first the index I, and then afterwards the index J, and in this way establish until the end of this week a matrix of the signs of oneness. You can see that this matrix will be a different matrix than the matrix of the structure of the textbook, because as I have said, this matrix is much more a matrix that has the overtone of divine signs, whereas the other matrix had the overtone of absolute Christian signs and its impact on Christian signs. Actually, what we get would then be two different matrices, and then the question always comes up, which says now, what is the relationship between those two matrices? This is a legitimate question, and the answer is that up to now, even in mathematics, one has not yet quite found out how to make a three-dimensional matrix. Matrices are usually just two-dimensional. They have two indices. Fundamentally, one could make a three-dimensional matrix, but it becomes so involved that it is better first to take one step after the other, and we can help ourselves in the answer how these two matrices will conjoin together very easily, by seeing, as I have said, that the textbook matrix, the structure matrix, has the overtone of absolute Christian science, and the oneness matrix, the overtone of divine science, that therefore these two matrices, so to say, could be put on top of each other, that they actually would show that if I understand the matrix of the oneness of being, that it would impel, so to say, the findings of the structure book matrix, of the structure matrix. In other words, as we go through these chapters of oneness, we can hardly escape to think also how this sense of oneness translates itself to the up to the level of Absolute Christian Science and Christian Science, therefore how it translates itself to the point of the structure matrix of the textbook. We will not be able just to stay always on the level of oneness, because we like somehow, in order to have a more practical, workable sense of oneness, we like to see what is the translatability of oneness to the level of Absolute Christian Science and Christian Science, and then naturally the matrix of the structure of the textbook is brought into focus and we can see the interrelationship of both. Here and there I will point that out, just as time allows it, so that we are aware that this matrix is not something all by itself. Just as we know, divine science does not stand all by itself. We have a subject that is called the one being, and that one being is dimensional, and therefore always has within itself the law of general translatability. In going through the chapters, we will always follow more or less the same pattern. We will take one chapter at a time, consider the general tone of oneness, consider therefore the general tone of dualism, which is dealt in that chapter. Mostly we can see the indication of the tonality of a chapter through the biblical note that is at the beginning of a chapter. They seem to be quite indicative of the standpoint of divine science from which the chapter is written. So we will investigate also those biblical notes. Then, when we can define to ourselves, more or less in exact language, in spiritual language, not so much in the American language, if we can define in spiritual language the standpoint of oneness, then we can build or state a law that is ruling that oneness. When we have stated the law of oneness of each chapter, naturally then, as we know the seven synonymous terms, we can easily elaborate that law through the seven. And in this way, give a method how one can use the sense of oneness in its more, with its greater influence it has on the level of Absolute Christian Science and Christian Science. It is also a very good example how we can extract from the textbook its deeper structure, and when we have extracted its deeper structure, that we can free from the text, elaborate this deep structure, and free from the textual wording of the textbook, but still staying within the true categories of being, really ponder and meditate or pray in these laws. This is always the nature of any textbook, that the textbook does not want to be a reading book, but that the textbook wants to give us those fundamental categories and laws that will enable us to free ourselves from the textbook and work along the science stated in the textbook without opening a textbook. We only study a textbook on chemistry until until we understand the fundamental structure of chemistry, the fundamental reactions of chemistry, the fundamental elements of chemistry. And once we have understood that, we usually close it and begin to work with those fundamental systems, structures, categories, laws, elements in a free calculus way. And only here and there, when we are no more quite sure about the principle of it, we turn back again to the textbook to make sure that we are in line with the science of it, with the system of it, and then we close it again and let thought flow within the categories of such a science. We cannot always go around from morning to night with a textbook in our pocket and constantly take out the textbook and read here a sentence and there a sentence. It would anyway be an atomistic approach. What we really should be able to achieve is that we can study the textbook in such a way that the system and structure of the textbook is our consciousness, our structure of consciousness, so that our structure of consciousness begins to calculate by itself, free from the pre-described symbolism of the language in the textbook. Then only a textbook fulfills its proper meaning. A textbook that is only used when one reads it is not a textbook. This is a reading book. A textbook has a different aim and purpose. It is to structure our consciousness. A textbook is not here that we can memorize the way the text presents a subject. It is to understand what is behind the text, the relationship behind the text, the structure behind the text, and to understand that is the basis from which afterwards we can work.